Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This is a special broadcast from SOPA 2024. My name is Pimelo Modine. Thank you so much to all of you for staying with us as you were hearing the Premier of Gauteng giving his seventh administration, SOPA 2024. And we've got lined up for you lots and lots of conversations alongside my colleague, Katlego Sekgoto, who's also on the ground here just to try and get a sense of what all of this means for all of us. I'm going to kick it off with MEC of Human Settlement in the province, Tasneem Mutara, who is no stranger to us here on Kaya 959. A very good evening to you, MEC, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good evening to you and your listeners.
New portfolio. Are you sort of running already, not even crawling into the job?
Yes, I have been. I think it's a very demanding but very fulfilling portfolio. You know, when I've had an opportunity already to hand over houses, and when you see just the joy on the faces of people who have been waiting for their houses, it's the fulfilling part, but very demanding, and
I hope I can make an impact. You are already handing out some of the homes I saw very recently. And as you're saying, you know, this has got direct impact on people's lives, on families, on generations. And maybe just tell me a little bit about that, and how, I suppose sometimes it's very easy to sit in the office, strategize, do budgets and all of that. But when you eventually, at the very end, meet the people and realize this is why we did this in the first place, it's quite rewarding.
No, it is definitely. I think, you know, that's it's part of why we do what we do. And as you say, you know, we strategize, we put things on paper, and you don't really understand the impact that we make. And I think the fact is that while we have a lot of challenges and a lot of difficulties, even in delivering and making that impact, the impact that we make is like you say, in the space of human settlements, it's about generations. It's about, importantly, it's just the security of tenure. The fact that you now have a home which you can bequeath to your family and they can continue doing the same. And it's an asset that you can use later on in life to leverage for all sorts of things. And I think, you know, it's often the difference between poverty, generational poverty, and breaking generational poverty.
The Premier spoke a lot about land invasions as well, that there will be a program, there will be an entire strategy and AI and all of those coming through to manage what happens on the ground, so to detect before it actually happens, land invasion, so that the province as well as municipalities, I suppose, can hold on to land that is earmarked for other projects, and you do prevent land invasion. Just maybe expand a bit on that.
So we are already using it. So we're able to early detect when land is being invaded, and again, we use technology. It was piloted. We're now expanding that to vacant land. It will include not only land owned by the province or municipality or national government, but even vacant land that is privately owned, because you know, when there's an invasion of land, we have to go through an eviction process if we've missed the 48 hours of removing them. So we have really a window of 48 hours to move people out of land that they've invaded illegally. Of course, the bigger problem is that when people settle beyond the 48 hours, and it then puts a strain on services. You often find in informal settlements connection to illegal connections to electricity. You often find informal settlements being, you know, the home of other illegal activity and crime. And as I said, it puts a strain on services generally. So we then have to divert services. We have to divert money to be able to provide temporary sanitation, temporary services, or services not planned for. And it really derails our plans. It puts a spanner in the works, and the budget that we had budgeted for to do X now has to move to do Y. So ours is to avoid them, stop them as they happen. Towards the end of the term, the last term, you would have seen my predecessor actually going into places and tearing down illegal temporary structures that were put up. Even when, so what they do is, the strategy is that they come, put up a structure, nobody is there. And later on, when they see that government or law enforcement agencies don't do anything, at a later stage, they come and occupy. So at the point where a structure is put up, we are now removing them completely.
So there's that, and then there are other projects. For instance, what we've been seeing in Alex, which is a little bit disturbing, where there are structures that were, of course, this was before your time, and this was a project that was started during COVID for COVID reasons, where there were structures put up for a particular reason. But somehow, I'm not even so sure if it's the municipality, I'm not sure whether who was responsible for the distribution thereof. And I understand it's also complicated by the fact that you had a long list of other people who've been waiting, that has been corrupted itself. And I know the province has said, we need to go back and clean up that list and start over in a way, and people must come back to the offices and update their details. Mm-hmm. So just maybe tell me what your plan is in managing what sometimes is, you know, the municipality's plans, mm-hmm. the province's plans to move people into property, and then somebody comes in and says, well, I want it right now. I've been on the waiting list for too long, and I'm not going to allow you to do your own processes to put people in.
So what the department has done is introduce a policy to be able to really address that. Mm. So it has taken the subjectivity of allocation away. Like you say, yes, the list, there are problems with the list. Of course, we use the National Needs Register. And then you know, there is the municipal priorities. So municipalities will agree to a settlement, a new settlement, that will deal with an informal settlement, as an example. But many people who are on the waiting list may not necessarily be only in informal settlements. Yeah. They may be in back rooms. They may be living in
the same house with others.
Yes, you know. So we've introduced a policy that will address, one, the 96 to 99 backlog. So in any settlement, 40% must go to the 96-99 list, 10% must be for people living with disabilities, 10% for military veterans where we have verified military veterans, and then we leave 10% of the settlement for what we refer to as special needs cases. So child-headed households. Mm. You know, media comes across a very sad story of somebody living in very, very terrible conditions. We're able to look at their condition, make an assertion, you know, decide whether they form part of that. Of course, you would have a situation where you're moving somebody who lives currently in Tshwane to City of Joburg or to Sedibeng, as an example. If they're willing to move, they can. But the policy takes away the subjective of dealing with the list. Somebody comes every single day to the office, you know, to deal with them, say, okay, you're next. But have they, of course, the fixing the list, fixing the waiting list has been something that we've spoken about for many, many years, but almost impossible. The list changes every single day. People register for houses every day. And I think while we are a rights-based society, so we've decided to have a country that is based on human rights, and we respect the fact that part of your human right is the right to shelter. We have to have a conversation about a moving target that changes constantly, every single day. You might find a situation where you have 6 to 8 tenants living in back rooms on one property. All of them have registered for houses, you know. And I think the it's a moving target. It's an ongoing process. We don't have enough money to build all the houses that we need for the current list, but we continue doing this work. And like I say, it's about how do people use their houses that they have now to be able to secure them going forward in the future. We do impress upon citizens to remain patient. It's not easy to do. What we have found and why we are now so hard on eradicating and stopping invasions is what we have found is that in the past, you start an informal settlement, you almost jump the queue. Mm-hmm. So you start an informal settlement, you get water, you get electricity, you
because
get sanitation.
It's an emergency.
It's an emergency. Yeah. You get, and we're saying that this policy now acknowledges that yes, there may be informal settlements, but there are others on the needs register that are not living in informal settlements. Yeah. There's the 96 to 99 list that we've got to eradicate, and then those that qualify according to the status on the list. So if you start an informal settlement tomorrow, just know that you will be treated like anyone else. You register on the list. If you qualify, you will be you will then be allocated a home according to the waiting list. If you don't qualify, we will be moving and eradicating informal settlements.
The president also mentioned in his SONA that one of the strategies going forward in this regard is also not to necessarily allocate a home,
a complete home.
It'll be to allocate and earmark areas where people can now decide to get land, and then we can then do that. So just to minimize and then reduce that list. Is the province really on that path as well?
Yes, we are. So what we call it is the Rapid Land Release Program. It's serviced stands. What we just are dealing with, the gap in the program, is to get approved plans from the municipality. So if you qualify, it's really to address the gap market, the gap in the market. If you qualify, you'll get a service stand. You build on your own with pre-approved plans from the municipality. That then deals with a whole host of people who don't have to necessarily wait for an RDP or another form of house, but service stand, you build approved plans, a choice of probably four depending on where we are and which municipality we are in, and you build on your own. What we are just tightening is the time frame. So we want to, and also just that you have a particular time to demonstrate that you have a source of funds, either an approved bond for the building or any sort of funding availability for that, and we're going to give you a set a particular amount of time for you to build in.
So there's the hostel. The Premier spoke about hostels and saying actually we need to stop calling it hostels. These are family units, but there will be an Indaba. We need to have a conversation about their needs. He's been on the ground actually, where, especially in Diepkloof, where there were issues, and then he was able to send in a team and then things were settled because things were sorted in a way. However, while the province intervened quite successfully, it seemed, the municipality struggled a little bit, you know, with doing their bit, because they said, well, we don't have a budget.
Yes.
It's very nice what, you know, we would like to take responsibility, but actually we don't have capacity.
Yes. So we're in conversation with the national department just to look at how they can come on board in redevelopment of hostels. Hostels have got a particular history in South Africa. And I think if we want to speak about a united South Africa that, you know, integrates communities, we've got to turn, we can't have hostels. And the Premier's quite right, we've got to have family units and, you know, family settlements that ultimately are integrated into communities, so that we don't have these sort of enclaves in communities, hostels. They're not part of the community, they're not integrated. And and essentially, of course, hostels were built as you know, housing for migrant laborers, men in the main, and over time organically they've become the family units that they are. So that we have to demonstrate that, and like I said, we're going to work with the national department just to see how they can ring fence certain funding to deal with what the municipalities can't do. And that's really the provision of bulk in the main. We do have the funds for top structures, but the hostel redevelopment, hostels can't look the way they look now. They've got to be real family units for what they were intended to be.
MEC for Human Settlement, thank you so much, Tazneem Mohtara. Thank you so, and you look lovely, by the way. Well, you should have started there. You look absolutely
you so
gorgeous
much.
Thanks for coming through.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Let's take a quick break. I'll be back with the MEC of Health in a short while. Well, thank you so much for staying with us. We continue our conversations with various MECs. As you know, we are coming to you live from Katlehong, where the Premier gave us the State of the Province 2024. This is obviously on the back of an earlier State of the Province we got from the Premier. That was his last sixth administration State of the Province. But we are now in a new administration, the seventh one. He comes back as the Premier of the Province. And so he was giving us clearly indications of what it is that they plan to do in the next 5 years. Of course, gave a quick recap on what it is he was able to achieve since he took office earlier on in the year to now. So let me just quickly come to MEC of Health, Nomantu Nkomo Ralehoko, who is in studio, in our makeshift studio here in Katlehong. But really lovely to have you, MEC. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Lots that the Premier spoke to. When it comes to your department, you have a lot on your plate. E-health.
is quite important for the Premier. He says, look, it's very important for everything to now get digitized. It will make service provision easier. It will make life easier. There'll be less corruption. It will just make for better access. Expand a little bit on that.
Indeed, Premier always gave us the responsibility, even in the sixth administration, if you remember. He said we must make sure that we focus on e-health. So we must change the systems, we must digitize in the hospitals, and we need to invest in technology innovations for our comprehensive health and information system, because we need to eliminate the use of papers in our hospitals, and you know our records, how they are. What we have done then, since this, in the sixth administration when we started, we had to go to Barra. We've started at Barra because we felt that we need to make an impact. So Barra is huge, there are a lot of records, so we have about 100 young people that are being trained then to make sure that they digitize our system at Barra. We're doing e-filing. That e-filing have started, I think it was 2 months before we came to the seventh administration. And we are really excited about that, because now there is a movement and improvement on that. Come this next quarter, we will be starting again then to roll it out now to other hospitals. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that the Premier said we must do, whilst we are enhancing our efficiency, eliminating the paper, there is a process again of making sure that besides the patient records, there is the issue of queues in our hospitals.
Yes.
So the queue management, it was one of the priorities that he said, you are going to do that. So indeed, I've started the queue management system at Rahima Musa Hospital. Mm-hmm. Now the process is starting. We'll be launching it soon officially, but already the work is being done in terms of the queue management. At Charlotte Makreke Hospital, we've started that queue management system. But even in the smaller hospitals, there's some work and improvement. Your Tembisa Hospital, we're doing that. If you can go to Tembisa at 2 in the afternoon, you don't find anybody at the clinic, because we have a system of making sure that we digitize, and then patients knows exactly that I'm here now, then I will move to the window when I'm being called, and then I take my medication, I go home. So there are those pockets in the province now of some of our hospitals that we had an improvement, which we're really excited about it, because Premier wants us to change everything, and the speed that we must work on that is it's one of the speeds that he's expecting us to do.
You speak of the queue management program that will be rolled out, especially at Charlotte. Charlotte had a unique problem in the sense that your queue problems back, obviously in the back of the fires, and there were renovations and so on, and the parking basements were affected and the like, and all of that. Your queue problem starts at the gate. Yes. It doesn't start within, right? What's the plan there?
Those cars that are parked,
not the gate,
parked
literally
outside.
From the freeway. Yes.
The cars that are parked outside.
Yes.
See, we've improved. You remember during that issue of the fire in the hospital, we had a problem of it, because the part that burned started on the side of the parking. Mm-hmm. So I think now there's an improvement, because about 700 cars now that are being parked inside the hospital, eliminating the cars that were parked outside. But we now are finalizing that process of rebuilding that block that was burned down. So soon we'll be reducing that queue that starts at the gate, in the cars there at the gate.
I'm going to ask you semantics. It's a simple question. Mm-hmm. Why have you closed the other exit point so that the flow of traffic could just move out the way it used to be before?
That side at the back.
Correct.
It's because they were still building inside. Yeah. So that's why it was closed. Because the guys that were building, they were saying they need now to build a specific thing, issues that they were putting inside to block the fire, so that if in any ward now there can be fire, that fire must not go out. They contain the fire in one specific area.
Yes.
Besides that, people have to be able to move, so that there must be that movement. But we are building, and I think soon they'll be finishing. I know that again now there is a contractor that is on site that have been signed in August, that is back again at Charlotte, just to make sure that we speed up the process.
Yes.
Because it's really frustrating that queue of the cars that are getting into Charlotte, including the people that are getting there.
The Premier didn't speak about it in this SOPA, but he spoke about it in the previous SOPA. He says, yes, he also wants e-health. You know exactly what I'm talking about. He spoke about, obviously, e-health and all of that. But he also said he wants a facelift. He wants some of these hospitals to be decent, for people to feel welcome, for people to want to use them. You cannot have an I 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 What's your plan there?
I want to invite Kaya
to come with me in one of our hospitals. Just Bethakoa Hospital here. We've changed Bethakoa. We are facelifting it, but even the old Bethakoa Hospital, we've renovated it. Now it's for mental health users, although we're still on the first phase. But we've changed the hospital inside, in fact, about 20 hospitals that I can take you to, mm-hmm. that I know that even besides that, this order of the facelifting that he did last. Yes. We have done that, but even now he said the initiative that we are happy about. There's a huge improvement in our hospitals, mm-hmm. including the very same Charlotte Maxeke that we spoke about. Mm-hmm. You go to Edenvale Hospital, you will see a huge improvement. You go to Far East Hospital, there's a huge improvement. Pulusong Hospital, there's a huge improvement. Pegim Langeni, the one that before people used to say, I can't go there, I'm going to die. If you can go and see Pegim Langeni now, it has completely changed. So there is a huge improvement that we're doing in our hospital. Infrastructure side, where we have been very weak, now we are more stronger, and I'm happy because even AG recognized that there's some work that we're doing on infrastructure, there's accountability that we're doing even with the monies that we're getting, but there is an improvement because AG picks up any hospital or any clinic and go and visit just to check if you are saying we've been given or allocated this amount of money, are you doing exactly what you're supposed to do? Mm-hmm. So they are monitoring and oversight work, it goes to that level. I was excited 3 weeks back when we had the cabinet Lekhutla, the PSC and Babu Nombembe, you remember the former AG, they were there presenting. They praised our hospitals in the province. In fact, the PSC commissioner, Commissioner Mavuso, he was in Pretoria,
yes.
and he said, I've done my cutter right there,
yeah.
so you must know that at the work that I received, the outstanding performance of those clinicians, you go to Steve Biko, minister himself, Minister Mtswaledi, doesn't go to any other hospital or private hospital. He goes to Steve Biko when they want treatment. I personally go to
Excellent.
Barra for my eggs.
Excellent.
For my eyes, I go to Barra. And now we're putting up an app that is going to help all of you, even those who have medical aid, that when you get there, you must use your medical aid so that we can pay you. Into the system, but we have to improve the system again. You go there because you know that when I'm here, I will get the service that I deserve
yeah.
in any other place.
Yeah.
Hence, I agree with you. We need to improve. I must intensify that program that I've started. I must not stop.
Yeah.
All the 37 hospitals must be the hospitals that you can go to and relax. Telemwera, and I always talk about it just around here.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best facilities that we have with the best equipment. We need to improve our staff attitude at
yeah.
Tele because you can't go there and you're being tossed from pillar to post because the staff doesn't take care. Hence, we have a campaign that I've launched called I Serve with a Smile and Care campaign because it's about Matupili, that campaign that we're doing, but simplifying it now, making it easier for everyone to understand that when I see a patient, when I see a person in the corridors of the hospital, that person I must serve there or him with dignity.
Before I wrap, MEC, I know they want to take you. I know the budget. We've seen now the budget. You have a lot on your plate. You've got 4 new hospitals that the province wants to build. You've got big renovations in 2 major hospitals. And you've just spoken to me about some of these improvements. Will you still manage to make sure that there's bed linen, there is enough medication in some of the hospitals and some of your own provincial clinics? Because that's where sometimes your service providers have said, look, you know, we've stopped providing. We get paid too late. There's a backlog, we know, of some of these papers way before your time, I must just add. But the question is, are you going to be able to do all of this with the current budget that you have and still manage to pay the service providers, hopefully on time?
With the finance background that I have, I always say what you have been given, even if it's a cent, make use of it so that people can see the value for money. I know it's not enough. I always say that even in the cabinet, I'm going to raise it to the premier that you have raised some other announcements now, additional announcements that I must do.
Yes.
Can I have more money?
Yes.
And I know they will give me, but it's not going to be enough. But I'm doing that. When it comes to payment of service providers, we had accruals, you are right.
Mm-hmm.
We had to struggle to reduce the accruals. Mm-hmm. And we are still, even now, because we have plans in place now in dealing with those accruals. Hence, you can see now, you no longer have the noise of the people that says we have not been paid. Because we sat down with them, made arrangements to some of them and say, you will owe you 10 rent, we'll be unable to pay you your 10 rent. Can we spread it so that we're able for 6 months so that you can get your money, all your money, even if it's not now? Because some of the accruals were coming as year back as 2003. Mm-hmm. So it has been a problem, including the surgical backlog that we have in our hospitals. It comes back as 2013, 2014, all those years, but I wouldn't say it's not my, it was not my turn. So it's me now that is there. I must clear that. Same as the 30 days we're dealing with it. But another issue that you were raising, besides the accruals and the 30 days payment, which we're not reaching out because of this amount, but there are those that we're paying them even with 15 days. So I've said, at least if we can pay a person, don't wait for 30 days, pay them before, because they need that money, especially those small contractors with SMMEs. So we're trying, but it's not easy to be in the Department of Health. But I think we're getting there.
Let me see. I really appreciate you coming through. And as I said, you look absolutely gorgeous. Thank you for coming through today. MEC Nomuntu Nkomo Ralehuku, who is MEC of Health in the province of Gauteng. And we'll continue to engage. But, you know, this is the little bit that we could do today. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more in a short while. Well, thank you so much for coming back with us. We continue our conversations with the various MECs as we come through to live to you from Katlehong, where the SOPA was given by the Premier of the province. MEC Kiriboni Diale Tlabela is in studio with us in our makeshift studio. MEC of Roads and Transport. Thank you so much, MEC, for making time for us. I know it gets quite busy here, so thank you for making time for us.
Thank you, Pamela, and good evening to Kaya FM listeners.
Well, lots that is on your plate. The Premier expects you to connect almost every other province, not only just province, other countries like the United Emirates. You've got a lot on your plate. Talk to us about what the priority is.
Yeah, true. The truth is, in order for us to be able to grow our economy as a province and as a nation, we need to look into various ways of doing that. And I think the discussion now is, how do we use the advantage that we are inland and we share borders with a whole lot of provinces, and how do we tap into that and assist? Because once Gauteng does not perform economically, the South Africa will not perform. Remember, we are the economic hub of the country, and we need to come up with initiatives that assist us to grow our economy. And I think that's the essence of the Premier's speech, to make sure that we assist in growing our economy, we assist in creating jobs, we assist in ensuring that South Africans' livelihoods really improve at all costs. And the Gauteng Limpopo Rail, we spoke about it in the previous term, and we are currently having a technical team of both provinces to deal with the final details. One of the things that should happen as the first phase is to the first phase is conceptualization phase, the feasibility study of whether the train should be an underground train or a sky train or what kind of a bullet train. But also to say to listeners and to Bakhiwa Gauteng is that there's a lot of investors that have interest on this. The Gqeberha Tshwane freight logistics train, it's a bit advanced, and it has been championed through our economic development. We are working together with MEC Maile on ensuring that we finalize and ensure it and see it through. So these initiatives needs all of us to work hard, but needs a lot of money, needs us to work with and attract more investors. And that's why you hear us working on ensuring that we fix our roads, we build more roads as a provincial government. Our road maintenance program started rolling out fully last political term at the end, almost, and we're doing very well in that regard. So the other issue is the expansion of Gautrain. Remember, there was an outcry of Gautrain expanding to townships. Mm-hmm. We are ready to expand it to Soweto and Mamelodi, as well as some parts of
There's quite a nice list, actually. It was Four Ways as well. I'm told it is Mamelodi, Four Ways, Soweto. I don't have another
line. And the, we'll eventually get to Atrageville, Sibukeng, Komirafong, Springs, you know. So we're wanting to ensure that Gauteng. Remember, our mission is to ensure integrated transport plans, transport systems in our province. So we're trying hard to make sure. And remember, we need to also work with other key role players in the public transport sector, like the taxis, the e-hailing, which has had, I think we have had conversations before, me and you, Pimelo, conflicts. And we're trying hard to make sure that these key role players understand that they need each other and we need them together to can be able to service us as people of Gauteng.
So you've got now a special unit to deal with that kind of conflict. Let's talk about what that would look like.
Okay, one of the things that I must really confess, and I think I've raised it in the previous, that the department for a long time was decapacitated in the area of work, registration, operating, licensing of public transport, where we had a lot of fraudulent activities happening internally and externally. So we have just appointed a chief director responsible. It's one of the things that I've been, for the past 3 weeks, I've been focusing, you know, into detail as to what is happening, who's there, what are they busy with, and how do we work with municipalities closely together? Because once you issue out a permit or a license for public transport, the municipality must be involved. So there has been leaks in the system that require us to close them. We have invited research institutions to come and also look at the problem statement and assist us in that while we are dealing with corrupt activities that are characterizing the service. So we are hoping that we'll improve the service. It will take some time, and that's why we're saying to public transport service providers, please avoid being tempted to participate in these illegal activities, because at the end of the day, they are the ones then who get affected. Yeah. That buying of a license then on the route create conflict and then they get killed.
So obviously you've had to do that work internally as well. You spoke about that yourself, that part of the problem was the issuing of license internally, that corruption. You have obviously got new cities that are coming up. Lanseria is going to have a nice new smart city. What have we learned about this initiative that you're going to have to do differently in issuing licenses for new cities, new pockets of developments where you will want public transport to be part of those developments? What have we learned that's going to assist, you know, the department to deal with less corruption, less fights, and so on?
You know, it's not only development of new cities, generally development, where you build houses. I think you have seen the Etwata thing. It has to do with a development in that area, a new human settlement development, new malls. As and when there's a new mall being built, people will be killed, there will be conflict. And one of the lessons, I think, around where I drive, President pronounced a project long time ago, and the developers are finish some phase one of some sort. And my observation has been, you know, what do? They put some taxi nyana with an old man that will sit under the tree for a while. And now that the phase one of the development is done, there are starting to be 3, 4, 5 taxis there. And initially there were no taxis at all. So that is booking the space and that is fighting for the space. Right. And only to find that there will be another person that will come that I have a permit for to be driving around here. So we are saying, and we are appealing to them, we are working closely with them, the Gauteng Taxi Industry, both associations, to look into this thing. But the difficulty is on the ground, to tell the truth. The provincial structure does not have a problem, the regional structures, but the local structures continue to have conflicts with one another. We're hopeful that the systems that we'll put in place will help us deal with the issues. We went to KZN to benchmark and look at how they resolved the issues, and we'll be copying some of the issue, the things that they have implemented. So we continue to understudy one another, and with them also capacitating us, we are having we have to also go meet with the minister, because there's this system that is controlled by national that we also need to talk to. So it's generally changing how we've been doing things, and one of the things is to ensure that we automate in that sector.
So one of the things we haven't spoken about, and the Premier didn't make mention of this, is the inequality element. So Gauteng is quite diverse, some really, really affluent suburbs and others not so affluent. And there is, for me, an elephant in the room about access to transport, where you would have these huge estates where nobody's allowed in the estate, but domestic workers and those working in those estates have to walk a long, long mile. Access to transport in those spaces, and just ownership of spaces that are supposed to be public, even in suburbs that are old, where everything is boomed and no one has access into the suburb because, you know, these communities have put up what I some suspect sometimes are illegal booms.
Quite difficult. We live in a country that has two worlds to it, and when we speak integrated transport systems and transport plan, we're talking about how do we integrate the e-hailing services as well as the bus system and the taxi system. So we're trying hard, and that's why you hear me talking about municipalities. Remember, municipalities, the boom gates, it's bylaws. You know, municipalities are the ones, the development of malls, municipalities must make sure that there's a taxi rank inside the mall, not in some corner.
Somewhere far away,
you know, access to, you know, I was saying even the affluent areas need public transport.
Yes.
Women like me and you don't want to take kids to school every time. Sometimes it's not possible. But if there was a municipal bus in that area, kids will just travel freely to school. So we are in dialogue to change the face of Gauteng, but also to encourage and change the behavior, to encourage people to use public transport. They can't use it if it's not accessible. They can't use it if it's not convenient for them. So we need to also we're trying hard to talk to these different operators to say, how do we improve your service? You've seen Santago and GNTA launching what they call Shesha, you know, despite the fact that now its implementation is also marred with conflicts. It's a noble idea, you know, but how do you get this industry to understand that we don't have to fight, we don't have to kill each other for us to make money? The bread is big, we can share it, and the people are many. All of us don't want to use private transport, in all honesty. It's not good for our health. But then if we have an efficient public transport system, we'll be able to travel from one point to another. So we're trying hard, getting them into conversations, uncomfortable conversations. It will not be easy. Remember, this is a traditionally feared industry.
In terms of hopeful. How Treasury, this is a long conversation. It's an old conversation before your time. In terms of subsidies and, again, disparities between transport that is for the more affluent, the Gautrains that are more subsidized rather than the very taxis that we speak of and sometimes condemn, who say, well, actually nobody cares about us, nobody looks after us, we fight for this little crumb because we're not even subsidized. Where are we with that conversation? Because for us to talk about equality and managing that we all have transport, we also have to take into account these transport managers who are saying, but the government doesn't care about us. They don't care. They don't ever look after us. But they do look after the Gautrain, for instance.
I think, honestly, to an extent, the taxi industry was neglected ever since time immemorial. And what is there in government, I think, and was established pre-democracy, is the bus subsidy grant that we get from National. And we are currently in conversations, I think, also as Gauteng, we're wanting to present a position paper to National on what we think this grant can be transformed to be. It's initiated to subsidize commuters who are using buses.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since we came into this role, we've been also, it was marked with challenges. And after correcting few challenges, we are seeing the ramp up in the service. People are starting to use buses. In some instances, there's still a lot of challenges. The Gautrain, remember, is not just a public transport. It's a great inheritance for all of us as Gautengers. It's a great project that turned around our economy to an extent. It's a great project that assists in alleviating congestion on our roads. Like Rosebank, I'm told before Gautrain, Rosebank was starting to deteriorate mm-hmm. and become a spoke town. And just after having a station there, there's economic activity. So you can imagine expanding to Soweto, what's going to happen. You can imagine expanding to Atteridgeville. It's exciting to create a lot of jobs. So it's not just a public transport mode, but it's an economic project to assist us grow our economy, attract a lot of investors to our province. I'm told by 2035, we are likely to be gridlocked. Landlocked, and we need initiatives like that. You know, somebody was talking about saying, when are we thinking of air taxis?
Yes.
Because we don't have enough land. So there are a lot of initiatives and big ideas that have been there. What Raditinta, you know, just to look at some point, our predecessors were speaking about the monorail. So it's to look into how do we grow our economy. And remember, we don't have budget. We don't have money as government. So we must go out and look for investors. And we're saying to South Africans in Gauteng, unfortunately for us to get services, we need to also pay for those services. You know?
Yeah. I wanted to quickly touch on before, that would be my very last question. I wanted to touch on some of the issues that you have with, for instance, transport. You spoke about Uber e-hailing services, and that situation has not quite been cleaned up. I know that a lot of the drivers who are called owners struggle with access to their principal offices, which they've asked government to intervene in. Have you been able to successfully intervene in those issues?
Uber did not classify itself as public transport.
Yes,
and we couldn't give them licensee. And I think part of what we were doing with amendments for NLTA was to look into that, because Uber came with COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, became more popular with COVID. We had meter taxis.
Yes.
So with meter taxis, you would know what are you licensing.
Mm-hmm.
It's public transport.
Yes.
So Uber is providing other services. So we, and that's why we are have created a platform for both the not only Uber, but what do we call it? The e-hailing services.
Yes.
And we want to have a broader forum to discuss with both the taxis and the e-hailing services, as well as bus operators in our province and the meter taxis, just to have a common ground. We need both of them. Some of them are feeders. Remember, PRASA is reviving the rail mm-hmm. network. And you can imagine, once it's fully in place, it's cheaper to travel with train. But then the intention of public transport is not for everyone to get to the CBDs.
Mm-hmm.
Others are feeders to others. And it's possible. It's happening in other countries. In developed countries, it's easy. People don't use their cars. It's only a few people on the road driving alone, but people use public transport. And we can do that. I was actually saying to the team, as and when we go outside the country, we must invite these operators and the service providers to come and see and understand the future commuter. The future commuter does not want to do the things that traditionally me and you grew up doing, you know. Yeah.
Let's talk about, I know the Premier spoke about this a bit. The President also spoke about this. Focus on local government. You have wonderful plans at the provincial level. Sometimes very, very difficult, because then you have the municipalities that are struggling. You had an issue with municipality that was struggling to pay the bus service of the city. And then there was a strike, obviously disrupting commuters' lives. But that money is there. It just was not ring-fenced. It was not looked after to do what it was meant to do. The Premier spoke about this, that you have to keep a closer eye on municipalities, that money that's intended for X is actually going for X. It has to be ring-fenced. Let's talk about those plans.
Government generally in our country seem to be struggling. And one of the struggles imposed on them is the new political landscape. Yeah. And I think we really need to dialogue on it as a country, because I think coalitions are our future. And how do we protect service delivery in that? Because once leadership continue to change, then that delays service delivery. And one of the roles added to my role as MEC of Transport in Gauteng, the Premier has made me an IGR sector champion. Quite a difficult, big task to also do as part of coordinating and assisting. But in transport, what we have what we call a transport IGR platform, where we sit with MMCs and technicalis HOD with other HODs to plan together. It's not as perfect as we would want it to be in different areas. And I think, again, the coalitions are a big challenge, because you move a step forward after 2-3 months that MMC is changed. Yes. You must have another one, and then,
you know,
you know, it's quite a, and I'm praying and crossing my fingers that, oh God, I wish, you know. So that is a challenge, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to crack that. How do we separate service delivery from the political gymnastics that continue to happen from time to time, and make sure that we deliver service, quality services to people? And we're trying hard in the road and transport infrastructure sector as Gauteng, and we're wanting our municipalities to be at par with us.
MEC, I really appreciate you coming through. I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much, and all the best with all. I mean, you've got a lot on your plate, so we'll be talking a lot, I suspect. Yeah. So thank you for coming through. MEC of Roads and Transport in the province of Gauteng, Kiriboni Diale Tabela, which is, as I said, MEC of Transport. We'll be speaking to her very, very regularly, I hope. But let me take a quick break. We'll be back with, I believe, Lire Mark is in studio for us this week. And he's going to be ushering in the weekend. But let's take a quick break before that.
And if you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.